Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio. This is the McCullough Report, and I'm Dr. Peter McCullough. It's a great pleasure to welcome back to the microphone Dr. Craig Wax. Dr. Wax needs no introduction. He's been on our program before. In fact, Dr. Wax is a very well-known public health figure, and I would say a leading family physician in New Jersey. He's been for many years in the media, and I've asked Dr. Wax to come on and discuss the most recent VAERS analysis report from the CDC. Craig, welcome to the McCullough's Report.
Oh, thank you very much, Dr. McCullough. It's always a pleasure to be on your show and to interact with you and to be able to have the opportunity to speak to listeners who can gain lots of education from the data that you have to present.
Well, we have certainly a boatload of data that's come in the last week. You know, the CDC maintains the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System for research, and a lot of people have done research from it. But finally, the CDC has done its own analysis. So what can you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, on the 9th, they came out with some data that I wanted to go over briefly and then get some reflections on the data. Because, you know, we've all had concerns about the mechanism of the mRNA and DNA shots and the fact that they, you know, force your body, all of your cells, in an uncontrolled way to make a spike protein, which we know is the inflammatory component of COVID-19 to begin with. I mean, they didn't pick a benign protein. They picked potentially the worst one. So there's a lot of questions and problems that we've had. And I know in my office, I've seen neurologic problems, hematologic or blood problems, cardiovascular problems, that is to say heart attack, stroke, things that may be related to the shots. And we know that kids don't benefit from the shots, but in many cases, they've been indicated way down into the single digits without data to say that that's useful, especially since the research that they did was on mice rather than humans. So there's a ton of concerns, and especially with the near death of that football player last week with the Buffalo Bills, Damar Hamlin, very, very difficult for everyone to watch and sad for his family and all his caregivers. And God bless the EMS people that responded so quickly. At any rate, let's talk about the VAERS data. So VAERS scientists, or the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, they look for unusually high numbers of reports in an adverse event category after a particular vaccine or a new pattern of adverse events come out. Like you remember, I'm sure in your lifetime, you know, the swine flu vaccine, I think there were, maybe six deaths or something, and they pulled the vaccine altogether. I mean, with a relatively small number of, I mean, believe me, nobody wants to see any deaths potentially related to a medical intervention that's potentially designed to save lives. But it was a major issue back then. And we've seen, if anybody Googles open VAERS, open VAERS, you can see an extrapolation from the difficult to use government system into a more easy to read system. But when scientists see either of the situations, when either there's a new pattern of adverse events or adverse events seem to be related to a particular vaccine, they focus their studies to determine if the adverse events are or are not a side effect of the vaccine. Now, if something happens, like the minute you take it, it's obviously related to some degree. However, what happens when it's a day later, a week later, a month later? I mean, let's give an example. I mean, we've all been in, God forbid, traumatic auto accidents. And at the scene of the accident, we seemed to be okay. And, you know, by the next day or 3 days later or 5 days later, you're feeling like a truck hits you. Wow, maybe I should have gone to see the doctor. I should have gone to the emergency department. So lots of these things come up way after the fact. So the information in VAERS is then correlated and then shared with the public. And the information that has come out on the 9th of January, 2023, is just incredible, that there seems to be multiple safety signal analysis that show clear safety signals for death and a range of highly concerning issues, that is to say, thromboembolic, cardiac, neurological, hemorrhagic, hematological, immune system, and menstrual events in U.S. adults. I mean, there were 770 different types of adverse events that showed safety signals in ages 18 plus in this regard. It's unfathomable that there hasn't been action to hold up these shots prior to now, let alone pull them from the market.
So it sounds like you're impressed with the number, but also the array, just the array of organ system syndromes that are being reported here and side effects.
Yeah.
What is causing
that? Absolutely.
Well, why is it so diffuse in the body?
Well, that's a great question. And thanks for posing it, because, you know, everybody thinks of, well, you know, where'd you get your vaccine? Well, I got it in my arm, and my arm muscle ached for a few days, and that was it. Well, conventional and traditional vaccines do a lot of that. They stay in the muscle tissue and the body reacts on them there. Whereas these new systems for mRNA and DNA delivery are wrapped in this lipid bilayer, which, for lack of a better word, is just this fatty globule that allows it entry and into a lot of other cells. So it allows it to exit the muscle tissue into the lymph fluid and get collected back into the venous collection system, go back to the heart and get pumped out through the arterial system and go to every organ in the body. And what's most distressing to me, Dr. McCullough, is that, you know, we know it crosses into lots of sensitive metabolic tissues, highly metabolic, important tissues like ovary and testicles. And it can even cross something called the blood-brain barrier, which has provided safety for humans for the millennia with regard to keeping toxins that or bacteria that circulate around the body, preventing it from getting into the brain or the nervous system control system. And what these things do, when these fat globules cross into all of these different various tissues, they can enter the cells and deposit their mRNA and DNA. And then the body says, hey, there's a message. I'm a ribosome. I'm going to make that protein. And then they make the spike protein, which, as I mentioned in the beginning of the discussion, is a very inflammatory protein. And it causes a ton of inflammatory cascade. I mean, it's worse than dominoes. I mean, if you've ever seen like dominoes go up and back and forth and trip a whole bunch of different things in a Rube Goldberg device, it's almost like a room full of mouse traps where you have a ping pong ball on each one and you throw one single ping pong in and all of a sudden they're all going off all over the place. This is happening all over the body, and even more dangerous than it happening in all of the tissues in an uncontrolled fashion, we don't know which tissues and what people make more spike protein than others. We have no idea. Does it matter your background, your sex, your height, your genetics? We have no idea. There's been no studies or correlative information on this. So when someone takes one of these high-risk shots, we don't know what the side effects are going to be. And as you point out, that's the, in my opinion, the mechanism for why we're seeing neurologic problems, heart problems, cancer problems. If I may also mention something, that the immune system is, it, simplified, is two large overlapping systems. And one of the systems is like the army or the military. It's basically designed to keep things out. And if something tries to get in, it closes the border and it pushes them out, or kills them and takes them out. And that's how you defend yourself every day, every minute, against other things. And people understand the immune system does that. But there's one thing that the immune system does that people don't necessarily have an everyday understanding of. And that's when you have bad cells already inside you from your own tissues, because you're constantly recreating yourself. And Dr. McCullough, I hate to tell you this, but you and I have cancer cells within us at the moment. But we're blessed with an immune system that acts as a police force to take out those malignant cells. And that's a wonderful thing that we have going for us. The problem is these mRNA and DNA shots, because they permeate all tissues and create spike proteins, they tie up the immune system. In fact, they may burn out entities in the immune system, which means A, you can get more infections, and B, you can't take out the bad cancer cells. And I've seen, and others in circles that we travel in, have seen all across the world, cancer recurrences in people that we thought were cancer-free, and cancers in younger and younger people without a good explanation as to what their risk factor was. Why did this happen?
Well, Craig, the FDA says that the vaccines cause heart damage. So that's uncontroversial. The FDA
check that box.
Right. Check that box.
Check that box.
FDA says it causes neurologic damage. Okay. Check that box.
Check that box.
FDA says it causes blood clots.
Check that box.
FDA says that it causes immune problems hematologic problems like vaccine-induced thrombotic thrombocytopenia.
Yeah, check the hematologic box. Sorry, okay. I got ahead of myself.
Right. So we got those four big ones. But the FDA doesn't say the vaccines cause cancer.
How about Guillain-Barré syndrome?
Well, that's
have that there?
Yeah, that's under neurologic. So, but
okay, check the box.
The FDA does not say right now that they cause cancer.
Interesting, Dr. McCullough. Allow me to explain that a little further. I'm not suggesting that, in my opinion, these vaccines cause cancer. I believe that they cause the immune system to fail to detect and eliminate cancer, if that makes sense.
Right. So, but I guess what I'm getting to is, based on cancer surveillance data, at least observationally, it hasn't been brought to the FDA's attention. Is there anything you see in this most recent CDC VAERS report that implicates cancer?
I'm still looking through it for data with regard to that, because it seems like they're big with neurologic and cardiac and respiratory. It seems like, and you know, now even reproductive with postmenopausal bleeding. And as a cardiologist, you may not be every day familiar with it, but whenever a woman develops postmenopausal bleeding, as a GYN or a family doctor or an internal medicine doctor, you always have to think endometrial or uterine cancer. So this is disturbing. I think that, you know, that's a potential link right there.
You know, there's a paper from Academic Medical Center here in Dallas regarding swelling of lymph nodes in the axilla and prompting more mammograms and more investigation for cancer. And what you're suggesting, even if it's not cancer, these well-documented phenomena, so postmenopausal uterine bleeding, changes in menses, lymph nodes, yeah, swelling, yeah, they prompt the evaluation for cancer. So they prompt that scare, if you will, in women. I guess what I'm getting around to is that the DMED database in the military shows an increase in cancer. Others are proposing, based on mechanism, that the immune surveillance for cancer could be reduced.
And right. That, well, let me.
Yeah, go ahead.
I wanted to piggyback on that, because I know our local radiology places have let everybody know, hey, if you're going out to get these shots, you have to wait X number of months after your COVID shot before you get a mammogram, because of the phenomenon you spoke of, that it stimulates, you know, changes in the lymph nodes, which may prompt a cancer workup. Having said that, that's potentially bad for at least two reasons. One reason is it postpones your screening. Like if you're scheduled to get it in March and you can't get it until, you know, 6 months later, well, guess what? Then you've lost the opportunity to screen at the interval that's been well established. So that's number one. Number two, as you point out, that we're going to have time and time again, multiple workups, because when, you know, having colleagues that are radiologists that read mammograms, it's a really high risk field. Obviously, you can't miss anything. And they tend to overread mammograms for that reason, because of, you know, medical litigation issues. So many, many more women are going to be called back for follow-up compression views and ultrasounds and even biopsies that hopefully won't yield any cancer. However, it's possible that they could. And I think that can't be discounted at this time.
Well, let's turn our attention to your practice. What types of cancers have you seen emerge in the vaccinated, just so our listeners can understand from a practitioner's perspective?
Yeah, well, I have a case in point that I could bring up. I had a 30-year-old patient, a female patient, very nice lady, doesn't do anything exciting, no risk factors. All of her parameters are pretty good, comes in for a yearly physical, generally fairly well. She came in with rectal bleeding. And I said, well, you know, this rectal bleeding is probably nothing. You know, it's probably a hemorrhoid. But I thought back to her family's history, and I'm fortunate enough to take care of her father, who she's 30, but the father was 57, and he was found to have a colon cancer. So I thought to myself, well, let's play on the safe side. And rather than just assume this is nothing or assume this is just a hemorrhoid, let me send her to the colorectal surgeon. Again, a slight overreaction on my part, but I'd rather overreact than underreact and have someone have a complication. So, and that's the difference between physicians and mid-level practitioners and potentially even you know, computer-based systems that are supposed to outmode doctors in a number of years. So this is just what a clinician does, or an educated physician. In any event, I sent her to the colorectal surgeon, and wouldn't you know, she had a colorectal cancer the size of a golf ball at age 30. And that's relatively unheard of, but she had had two of the mRNA shots, and I'm not sure whether it was Moderna or Pfizer, without her record in front of me, but she also had a booster, and all of these took place in a relatively short period. So all of these insults to her immune system, you know, were being pumped by the government, academic medicine that's been bought and paid for, all kinds of other entities, workplaces trying to force it. Although, as we know, the vaccine or the shot, if you will, does not prevent you from getting COVID or spreading COVID or hospitalization significantly from COVID. So if there's no upside and there's only downside, it doesn't make any sense why this madness continues. There must be other causes.
Well, Craig, here's the link. So what you're talking about is, listen, she's a young person. She has rectal bleeding, but she's got a family history of colon cancer.
Right. So if I may interject, she probably had a genetic predisposition to this. And my theory is, and maybe you can speak to this or some of our colleagues can, my theory is that she had a genetic predisposition to this. Perhaps she was going to get it later in life, but something about the vaccine insults times three interrupted that and switched that cancer switch on, or failed to switch it off.
Well, Craig, here's the concern. So University of Pittsburgh paper by Singh and colleagues shows that by computer modeling, that the S2 spike, the segment of the spike protein, which the body gets loaded with the vaccines, that the S2 segment interferes with the P53 gene, which is the tumor suppressor gene for many cancers. Now, it turns out in colorectal cancer cases, the P53 gene is mutated. There's a loss of immune surveillance in 43% of tumors, and then the remaining have a compromised P53 function because of alterations in gene encoding for P53 regulation. So what?
There you go.
Yeah. See, what I'm telling you is it's biologically plausible that multiple rounds of spike protein production in your patient impaired the immune surveillance of a cancer. Now, she was prone to the cancer because she had the familial history of colon cancer.
Correct.
So it all fits together. One of the reasons why cancer may not be in VAERS is VAERS is reported by doctors, nurses, others, mainly people who gave the vaccines or saw the patient shortly after. It's typically not used months or years after a vaccine. It's really a reporting system.
Well, you know, it's interesting that goes to that point, and I'm sure you can speak about it in Texas because I think you mentioned it in a few of the movie documentaries that you were involved in, that there were multiple immediate ramped up government and military driven installations at academic medical centers that pitched tents and did these shots day and night. And then when the people had the side effects and problems, the tents were gone, the people were gone, and there was nobody to speak with. That there was, you know, no ear, so to speak, to listen for all of the events. All of the events fell into the crowd, into your office, my office, and other offices.
Well, Craig, I just want to get the citation in for the P53 for your patient. It's by it's Liebel and Hoffman from the Institute of Technology of Toxicology, University of Medical Center in Mainz. And it was published in Cancers, the journal of Cancers in 2021. The title of the paper is Role of P53 Signaling in Colorectal Cancer. I want to ask you another question, Craig, since you're in such prominent position in practice. Did you ever get a notice from an insurance company, a health system, anything that came in your office to warn you about the side effects of the vaccines and how to report to VAERS?
Right. So generally in this kind of a situation, in years past, there would be either a government or academic entity or a medical group would say, you know, hey, just so you know, this is rolling out. And here's what the problem is. In fact, the manufacturers, whenever there's a recall or an issue, are law bound to contact us directly within X number of days. Well, when it comes to the mRNA and DNA shots from Pfizer and from Moderna and from Janssen, Johnson & Johnson, there has been zero communications. And something that's disturbing that has even been brought up on in the Texas Senate and the floors of Congress, that the package insert, the very thing that physicians are law-bound to understand and help people to make informed consent, whether they agree or disagree, the very papers, because these were emergency use authorized and not FDA approved, these very papers are blank. Now they're included, but they're blank. Why would they include a paper that looks like a package insert, but it's blank? That almost sounds like intent to deceive to me. I mean, I don't think you have to be a rocket scientist, but perhaps even a real scientist or physician, you'd recognize that that doesn't smell right.
It's true. You know, in the U.S. Senate on December 7th, 2022, Dr. Renata Moon, a pediatrician from St. Louis, Missouri, showed the intentionally left blank package insert. And to this day, Craig, aren't the package inserts so blank? They haven't been filled in, right?
Yes, they're absolutely blank. And I really feel for all of the pharmacists that 10 years ago didn't know how and weren't called on to give any vaccines, but because it seemed profitable for the big corporate entities, the CVS Caremarks and the Walgreens and, you know, all of the other big pharmacy PBM giants out there to give these shots. They trained up their pharmacists and all of a sudden everybody's giving shots. Then this emergency comes along and all the rules are suspended and everybody's giving these shots. And I would bet money that half of the pharmacists out there have had more than second thoughts about this, but they don't know how to feed their family otherwise if they lose their job for this huge corporate entity that's forcing them to do this. They kind of have to turn a blind eye to their heart and the science in their head, which is incredibly disturbing.
It's so true. Craig, in your practice, of those who took COVID-19 vaccines, what percent are going to continue to take them? What percent have stopped? And give me a sense of the level of regret people have.
Yeah, no, that's definitely interesting. And then I think I have to get a move on. I've got some other clinical issues I've got to attend to. In my practice, I mean, I practice in southern New Jersey, which is outside the Philadelphia area, the Delaware Valley, if you will. So it's a I kind of am at a transition between a suburban area and rural area, surprisingly enough, where I am. And fortunately, my patients have all been wary of all of these products. Now, some of them faced job pressures to get them. They faced school pressures to get them. They had to withstand those. They've had family pressures. You know, oh, you can't come see the baby unless you've had the shot. I mean, it's unbelievable the level of, gosh, I mean, I hate to call it warfare, but it almost seems like mental warfare that everybody's at war with everybody on this. And the only people that seem to be in the know are the people at the top that are giving the bad information. But in any event, I digress. Sorry about that. But in my practice, I would say 50% of the people have had some number of shots, and 50% of the people have not had any. They've held out. And of the ones that have had shots, say the 50%, I would say 40% of those that it, well, let's just say almost most of them have some level of regret and have stopped taking them because they've either had adverse events themselves, had family members with adverse events, they've read about adverse events, they've seen adverse events. And they're just concerned and skeptical. And they've heard the government over the last 3 years saying the same thing, safe and effective, safe and effective, safe and effective. And TV, safe and effective, safe and effective, safe and effective. I mean, you hear it in your sleep. And if you hear a lie often enough, you start to believe it. But when it comes in contrast and in direct opposition to what you're seeing with your eyes, hearing with your ears, and feeling with your hands, that's when a person wakes up and says, enough is enough. So, in my practice, I would say 50% have had no shots, 50% have had shots, and then some stopped after one, some stopped after two. Some said, you know what, I get a booster, and I'm not getting a booster every 3 months for the rest of my life because I've seen and heard the problems. And I treat all patients in my office the same, whether they've chosen to participate in this, they were forced to participate in this, or they refused to participate in this. And you know what, Dr. McCullough, I treat them all for COVID when they get it, because everyone gets COVID. This virus, this bat virus that probably should have, would have, could have never crossed into the human body, but you know, was unfortunately tampered with and was made to latch on to, you know, ACE receptors. It's just, it gets everybody eventually, and no matter what. So I don't find the shots helpful, and I do find the shots potentially harmful. So there's no upside. And I think the American public is wising up to what's actually going on here, that this is a much bigger game, and this is not a COVID emergency, but this is some other sort of emergency.
Well, Craig, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you so much for
Thank
all
you.
your insights, and I'll let you get back to your patients.
Thanks again. Be well, Dr. McCullough. Privilege indeed. Be well. See ya.
Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio. This is the McCullough Report.